The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on WMAL.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, a new study from the University of Southern California Lusk Center for Real Estate concludes that new household formation, which is a key driver of housing demand, has recovered after the job losses that accompanied the recession. And guess what? While it's known that negative economic shocks, such as major drops in employment, they reduce household formations, little was known about how long these declines would really persist. And so the study, which is authored by the Lusk Center Director of Research, Gary Painter, and a doctoral candidate, Jung Hyun Choi, they find that household formations consistently fall in the first quarter after an increase in unemployment. Let me repeat. They find that household formations consistently fall in the first quarter after an increase in unemployment, but they return to their previous levels within about 3 years. And that's true regardless of whether jobs have returned. So whether jobs have returned or not, household formations begin to come back to their normal levels within a few years. And what that shows us that even a permanent increase in the unemployment rate will not have a permanent impact on household formation. As a result, policymakers and industry practitioners have a new level of predictability when it comes to how economic crises impact the rate of new households. So now, according to researchers, household formations fell to nearly zero from 2008 through 2010. And the formation rate then played catch-up for about 3 years. And even though jobs have not really fully returned, as we all know, household formations have now recovered to their pre-recession levels of 1 million per year. And that freeze in formations is over. Now it's finished and people are again moving out and forming households. And that means that real estate professionals and policymakers should not keep waiting for pent-up demand. So while a number of factors will continue to influence the housing recovery, household formation is no longer one of them. Households are forming. So the study reviewed quarterly data from 1975 through 2011 and found that the three-year recovery rate in household formation was typical for all major employment shocks to the economy in the last 30 years. Now, our most recent economic downturn was obviously the most severe of all of those, and yet household formations came back in line within 3 years. Now, this begs a question. If people don't have the jobs and yet they're still forming households, what are they doing? Well, generally, we've seen a large rise in rentals. We've also seen a large rise in the purchase of foreclosures and short sales and those kinds of things. At some point, the price of real estate will become prohibitive unless the income per capita income for those who are employed rises to meet the cost of the housing. There will then be a stalemate of some kind, or people will be forced to move where houses are less expensive, or they will get a gift from mom and dad, or they'll get a new job, right? Because you can't afford what you can't afford. Even if the payment drops and drops and drops, yes, it gives you affordability from a monthly standpoint, but the corpus or the body of the debt remains massive. Think about it. At a 3.5% interest rate versus a 6.5% interest rate, you can afford about 25% more house. Well, that's a significant increase in the house that you need. If rates were to go to 2.5%, that would further increase people's capability of purchasing real estate by decreasing the cost of the money on a monthly basis. But the impact would not be overly severe. It would actually cause more of an injection into our economy because people go through massive refinancing of the existing debts that they have, whether they're in commercial, residential real estate. If you can take your existing 3.5% or 4.5% interest rate and drop it to 2.5% or 3%, the monthly savings can then be taken and invested either into something that provides you a return or you will relieve your debts faster. You know how I feel about debt. And you know the meaning of mortgage because I've said it quite a few times. But just in case, you know, the old meaning of mortgage is death grip because banks in France would lend money at usurious rates, high interest rates that the owners of real estate could not pay back in their lifetime. So what would happen? The bank would reach out and with the death grip, the mortgage would reach out and take that property back. Why is it so important to kill debt, amortization of your loan means to kill. Think of mort from mortuary, right? Or Mordor. Think of mort. So to amortize your loan is to kill it. Folks, we have justified keeping debt because of tax write-offs, right? And I grant you, there's within the overall scheme of wealth management, there are times when it's good to invest your money in things that will produce a higher rate of return. But all in all, isn't it better to just be out of debt? The freedom of mind that we have by not having that? To look more at a 15-year mortgage or a 20-year mortgage instead of a 30? Or if you have a 30, to pay that extra $500 or $100 or $50 each month. Just sock that in, and what you're doing is relieving yourself of paying the bank a percentage according to what your interest rate is, a percentage on an essentially borrowed instrument. Plus, you'll kill your mortgage faster, and eventually you'll be debt-free. It's a beautiful thing. Well, in putting real estate on the market, we've had a number of new scenarios that have come up, and I want to share what the situations have provided for our sellers. For instance, I put a home on the market for $850,000 in Potomac. We generated about 29 people through the house in just 6 days. I had 3 offers on the home. We were able to get offers that exceeded the list price using a couple of different mechanisms, including an escalation clause. An escalation clause is where a buyer comes in and offers a price, but then offers a cap of how high they will compete with the next closest offer, providing a margin to go a little bit higher. For instance, an offer comes in at $850. Another one comes in at $850, but says, I'll beat any other offer up to $865,000. And I'll pay you $5,000 more than that next best offer. So you have two at $850. One doesn't have an escalation clause. The other one does. If the first one only goes to $850, the second one only goes $5,000 higher, or $855. Well, we got a buyer who came in with a very, very good offer, which was quite a bit higher than the list price. And we ended up getting it under contract for just under $870,000. Our client was thrilled. Clearly, we got a great price for them. We also got a very clean settlement and a fairly quick settlement on a vacant property. When it comes to negotiating on the appraisal of the property, think of it this way. There's a buyer for every house, right? There's also a second buyer that we call the appraiser. The appraiser is going to measure the square footage of the property, calculate the true benefits, whether it's new windows, upgraded kitchen, all brick construction, views that you might have. So you want to be sure that you can justify the value of your property, not just with the buyer, but also with the bank. Suppose the bank comes in and says it's not worth what the buyer's paying. Well, another tactic that we took with the 3 offers, we negotiated with the winning buyer to remove a portion of the appraisal contingency. Essentially, they are guaranteeing to cure some of the deficiency if the property sells for less than the sales price. Now, that's great for my client, because if it doesn't, in fact, settle at the price that we've agreed to, and the appraisal comes in for something less than that number, then who's going to make up the difference? The buyer, not the seller. It's that kind of tactic that the Eric Stewart Group is excellent at in making sure we protect our seller client when we're representing the seller. On the buyer side, we have our tools. For more information, go to ericstewartgroup.com, and I'll be right back with Stuart Rosenthal.